There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Ah, Renfield, listen! What sweet music the non-gender-specific children of the night make!
Yes, my non-hierarchical but still respected senior colleague, your ecologically sustainable coach is ready for your journey into the night!
Excellent, Renfield! I want you to know that I appreciate and acknowledge your efforts and hope that you feel valued.
Thank you, my non-hierarchical but still respected senior colleague. I truly feel seen.
As you should, Renfield. By which I do not mean to deny your agency by imposing my emotional expectations on you.
Oh, no, sir. I did not find your phrasing triggering at all.
Ah, good, good. I find that very validating.
Master, I'm sorry, but this sucks. I know this is supposed to be empowering and productivity increasing and synergy promoting, but it just feels wrong.
Oh, by Lugosi, I'm so glad you said that. I don't know what half this stuff means.
Me neither.
Would you like me to kick you in the head and then call you a worthless bug-eating lackey?
Oh, Master, would you?
Of course, my old friend. I mean, you worthless bug-eating lackey. Boot to the head.
Oh, ah! Oh, thank you, Master. Thank you. And thank you for joining us once again for our penultimate episode in our series, I Want to Watch Your Film. This week's entry is 2023's Renfield, starring a pair of Nicks as Dracula and Renfield, exploring their twisted relationship through the lens of modern psychosocial theory. So you know we're in for a barn burner. I'm your host, Max Spank Me Vamp Daddy Levine, and over there, stalking a particularly juicy-looking house centipede, is Mike Nummy Nummy Bugs Loose. Don't talk with your mouth full, Mike.
I forgot to get the barn.
Oh, damn it. This will be a shed burner. But before we start burning any structures at all, we have to deal with our
poll question.
Before, we asked you, what setting, culture, genre would you most like to see vampires plunked down into? Matt Reisman says, Byzantium. Well, duh. Byzantium is such a cultural crossroads that vampires could come from anywhere, which I think could be part of what makes the setting interesting. Hmm. The characters might not know. Oh, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
Tony Keller said, vampire heist film.
Oh.
Now, there is no reason you couldn't do that. I just saw a zombie heist film. The zombies weren't the ones doing the heisting, but...
Okay, I was going to say, what does zombie want? Yeah. Except brains.
What else? Brains! Yeah. Break into vault, get brains! Charles Forsythe said, I'd pay to see a Twilight movie. Charles!
Really?
Blade shows up to do what he does best.
Oh!
Yes, I would pay a lot for that. I would pay so much money to see Blade come up and start decapitating the Meyerpires.
Wow. Huh. That might be really fun. Remarkable.
Sport. Dave says, a Western. Howdy, partner. I've come to suck your blood. There ain't enough room in this town for the both of us. Vampires out under a full moon on the prairie. What could be more lyrical? Maybe an occasional were-coyote. You know, that's we sort of, with Near Dark, that's kind of a modern... But I don't think I've ever seen, like, vampires of the Old West.
Yeah? No, that not really. I mean, I'd really pay to see something just leap out of the darkness and suck the blood out of John Wayne. That'd be great.
Ah, cut it out, yep. Yeah, pilgrim, stop
this
chewing on
my neck. This wound,
my
mother.
Ow, ow. Oh, no, I crave human blood, my mother.
Wow, that's mixing three genres, vampires, the West, or John Wayne, and The Conqueror.
Yep. Kelly Cooper said, the challenge is, what genre have vampires not already been dropped into? That is true.
I can't think of a vampire legal drama, and the idea amuses me. So that's my answer. Oh, I like that.
I mean, real bloodsuckers in court.
Exactly. It just all they're missing is a briefcase.
I have to go. I hear an ambulance.
Right. Ah, no, Your Honor, you will support my objection.
1-800, call Drek.
Have you been drained of blood by a creature of the night? Would you like to be? Call.
Anyway.
Yes, and from the snowy, vampire-ridden lands of the north, we have Vince, who says, there are genres that haven't had vampires in them? No. Seems like they've been inserted into everything. Not sure I would like to see them in, say, a Western, because I don't like Westerns. Well, that's fair. Yeah. But it could work. Maybe a political drama could find a way to get some actual bloodsuckers in there. To be clear, I am not sure they haven't already been on those genres at some point. I was going to say sci-fi, but I remembered Life Force and Planet of the Vampires. Yeah, there's a bunch of sci-fi vampire movies, a lot of post-apocalyptic ones.
Mm.
And of course, our vampire from the Emerald Isle himself. Ooh. That fine broth of a boy. Bill O'Lading. I like seeing vampires live through history, including flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Stories where they live in the present day, but we also see them in Regency England. Part of a Mongol horde. Bring the conqueror in.
I think we just covered that.
Yeah. Or during the Roman Empire, etc. It's fun to see them navigate the shifting fashions, morals, and world beliefs of humans around them. True Blood, albeit a TV show, did it right. Bill was transformed during the Civil War, Eric during the Viking era, Pam in a Victorian brothel, and so on.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Brothel.
The brothel.
Well, it looks like we have one more entry, a little blinking light on our hotline, and wow, it seems to have stunned Max senseless, or at least speechless for a moment, and it's not at all a last-minute edit because we forgot that we had something from Doris. Anyway, here's our answer from Doris.
Hello, Mike Max Movies. Or is it Max Mike Movies? Sorry. Anyway, this is Doris Hempelmeyer. Hi, Max. I am here to answer your poll question for this week, which just happens to be, what setting, culture, genre would you like most to see vampires plunked down into? Well, I've got a couple of answers for you. I don't know if they're genres, so to speak, but you follow along. Anyway, the first one I thought of was animation. Let's go with some animation. Let's go with something, you know, like Muppet Babies. Can you imagine a Muppet Baby vampire? I know they have the count, but, you know, it's something different, you know. Or maybe like a Pixar movie about vampires. That might be fun. You never know. It's a thing to think about. My other one would be James Bond. Why not? He goes and he fights crime on a world basis by day, and then by night he's out there sucking necks. Isn't that what James Bond does anyway? Anyway, those are my answers. I wish the happiest of holidays to both of you, especially Max, and of all the listeners out there listening to Max Mike Movies, because it is the best podcast on the airwaves, or the second best. I happen to know of another one that's my particular favorite, but we'll go with this one for now. And a Happy New Year. Bye.
Well, seems like Doris likes Muppet Baby Vampires, or perhaps James Bond and Vampires. Oh, I still see that Max is stunned to silence, so we'll give him a moment and let him catch up. Thank you, Doris.
But what about you, Mike? Where do you think we should see some vampires drop next?
I honestly think that little thing that I dropped last episode, Vampire Shakespeare, I think could be really, really cool.
Only night performances.
Yeah, so Shakespeare, that might be cool. Fun. I do like the idea of the Byzantium thing, just because we never see, like, when vampires might have started. Like, we did it a little bit in Queen of the Damned, like, oh, she's Egyptian. Yeah, sure she is. Okay, fine. But, you know, and I think that one of the problems of seeing vampires age throughout history is that we have to deal with them being bored. And I don't know that that necessarily makes as much of a fun story. Because let's face it, one of the things that I liked about the Anne Rice vampires is their inability to deal with changes in society. Yeah, they just have to wait 20 years, and then that decade becomes popular again, and then they're fine.
Yep. That is retro, yep.
Yeah. So I think I would like to see a better... I don't like Westerns either, but I think I would like to see a better take on Western vampires than Near Dark. I think it had potential, but kind of the white trash vampire kind of works, so... Yeah. What about you, Max? So what vampire genre mix have you not seen that you would like to see, or when you've seen you'd like to see more of?
I like the idea of vampires on ancient Rome, for one, but I'd also like to see them in, like, Edo period Japan, as long as there's no hopping.
That's China.
That's right. It's too close. But I think because the Edo period is when the Westernization started, and you could have, like, European vampires coming over.
One of the things that, you know, you could totally make some sort of socially, I don't know, aware thing about the vampire invading, and it could be the invasion of culture, et cetera, et cetera. You could totally do that. Wow, man. I think you just wrote a movie.
Listen up, Hollywood, and I want my cut. I want the creative control and a two-story trailer. Anyway.
Yeah.
But thank you all. These were great. We always love your answers.
We do.
And we want, as always, our insatiable hunger for the answers of innocence, or you guys.
I hunger.
We hunger. Thank you, Sinistar.
That's my new nickname, and you have to call me that.
No, I don't. Our question is, what part, if any, of standard vampire lore strikes you as particularly silly, odd, or dumb? You know, the crossing running water that they have to be invited in. And there is an exemption. No Stephanie Meyer's sparkle ponies. All of their lore is dumb.
Yes. What lore?
Yeah. And at the end of the show, I will reveal the dark secret of which coffin you must whisper your answer into.
Big secret. Coffin. It's email. Well, I gave it away. Oops.
Ah, you fool! Ah!
Yeah.
But now...
the facts.
Budget. $65 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that was probably the salaries, but... Box office, $26.4 million.
That many?
Mwah, mwah, mwah. Yeah, that's a sad trombone right there.
Oh, well.
I don't know if you noticed this. One of the writers for this movie is Robert Kirkman, a.k.a. the guy who gave us The Walking Dead and Invincible.
Oh.
Yes, and that's why none of the vampires in this movie have visible feet.
Huh?
It's a running gag about Robert Kirkman that he can't draw feet.
I don't think Kirkman's the artist, he's the writer. And also, I think you're thinking of Rob Liefeld, who can't draw feet.
Same thing, they're both named Rob. Anyway.
No!
I am never wrong. Despite a history of turning down non-leading roles in studio films, that explains a lot, Nicolas Cage signed on to play Dracula because it was a lifelong dream of his to portray Dracula. Rebecca, you know, Awkwafina's character, the cop, her father's first name is revealed to be, very briefly in a picture on the wall, Morris Quincy, dedicated to the officers who died in the line of duty. This is a reference to the character of Quincy Morris, the cowboy who joins the characters in defeating Dracula after Dracula kills his friend.
Okay, going to ask why her name was Quincy, but no.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's the name of the guy who kills Dracula in the book.
Yeah,
okay.
Mr. Cowboy. In an interview, director Chris McKay admitted that the film was actually intended to serve as a direct sequel to Todd Browning's 1931 Dracula, the one with Lugosi. McKay had also attempted to have the film's trailers and posters refer to this fact, but this didn't pan out.
Fine.
The circumstances of Renfield meeting Dracula and falling under his control are presented as an extended reference to that movie, the 1931 one, depicted these same events. Several of the key shots are even recreated with Nicholas Holt and Nicolas Cage in the place of Dwight Frye and Bela Lugosi. Unfortunately, Nicolas Cage is neither double-jointed nor Hungarian.
Neither. No, he is, however, somewhat tall, but we'll get back to that. Yeah.
They also use the music from Swan Lake, which is a shout-out to the music they use in the opening credits of that movie.
Oh, that's right. See our entire episode on three versions of Dracula, which does include the original, so, yeah.
Nick Cage's uncle Francis Ford Coppola directed...
What?
Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1992. And the studio had wanted Cage instead of Keanu Reeves to play Harker. But Coppola didn't want to work with him after their bad experience on Peggy Sue Got Married.
I mean, never mind the fact that, could you imagine, because wasn't Winona Ryder who played Mrs. Harkness there?
Yeah.
Wouldn't he have, loomed over her?
I would have been more worried he would unhinge his jaw and swallow her, but...
Never mind his British accent, which we will be getting back to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mina, I had such a terrible time in the castle! Okay. I can just see it.
Yeah.
Dracula introduces himself as the Prince of Wallachia. The historical Vlad Dracula, or Vlad the Impaler, was indeed the ruler of that region and had a reputation for cruelty. We all know this. Transylvania was the northern neighbor of Wallachia.
Oh.
Renfield's syndrome is a real medical condition, or at least a psychiatric disorder. It's very rare. It's also called clinical vampirism, where an individual has an intense fascination with drinking blood or believing themselves to be a vampire.
Okay.
This is also most of the goth community. Director Chris McKay believed that Nicolas Cage was the perfect pick for the character. Quote, Cage's father played the movie Nosferatu for him when he was 5 years old. This explains an awful lot about Nick Cage. Nick Cage's mannerisms as Dracula are all explicitly based on Christopher Lee's Dracula, which he, Cage thought he was the best Dracula ever.
Okay. I admit, I've never actually seen one of those Hammer horror films with Christopher Lee as Dracula. Have you?
Yes, they are definitely movies.
Are they slow?
They are a tad slow, but most of the ones I've seen have been in focus.
Are they British?
Yes. The featured castle we see at the beginning is called the Neuschwanstein, with a Romanesque revival style, and is located in Hohenschwangau, Bavaria, Germany.
Sure.
We have seen this before in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Yep. It's not as old as it looks. It's from 1886. Yep.
That's the castle of Bulgaria.
Yep. I have millions of dolls. The film is set in New Orleans, where Nicolas Cage himself already has a pyramid-shaped tomb waiting for him in St. Louis Cemetery Number 1.
Well, let's get him to it, shall we?
I did not know this until I was looking through this. There was a deleted scene, is a deleted scene from this movie where Renfield has a dance number.
Okay.
You can find this on YouTube. He dances to Jackie Wilson's Higher and Higher. And if you watch the credits, there are little background clips and stills from the sequence.
Okay.
I see why they cut it. It's kind of cute, but it makes no sense. Nick Cage is the 5th Academy Award winner to play Dracula after Morgan Freeman. I had to look this one up because Morgan Freeman, what? Yes, he played Dracula on the old kids show, The Electric Company.
Oh, God. Okay, yep. That's a reach.
Yep.
Reach.
Jack Palance from Dracula 1973, because Renfield is my number one, a guy.
Yeah.
David Niven from Old Dracula.
What?
And of course, yeah, Old Dracula. It was a movie in 1974. Nobody remembers it.
Sounds like a whiskey you'd get in like a bar in the Old West. That's,
give me a shot of Old Dracula. And Gary Oldman from the one we just talked about.
Yeah.
Kyle, the cop who asks if Renfield is Quincy's boyfriend, and they keep yelling, F you, Kyle, wears a vest with the name tag K. Raimi. This is, in fact, an homage to the filmmaking Raimi Boys.
Okay.
The makeup artist Christiane Tinsley revealed they had to shave Nicolas Cage's real teeth to fit the customized Dracula dentures, which were 3D printed.
Ouch. Do they have hair growing out of them, or what is the issue there? I don't know.
During the end credits, one of the books is shown, and it has the word power in the title. I watched for this. And it's modeled after the cover of a book called I, Strahd. The book is about Strahd, the vampire from Dungeons & Dragons' Ravenloft setting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's Drizzt?
Drizzt. In the beginning, when the curtains are pulled down to spill sunlight on Dracula, Nick Cage intentionally mimics Max Schreck's Death by Sunlight pose from Nosferatu, even though the camera angle makes it harder to spot.
Ah.
And some people may watch and wonder, why don't Rebecca and Renfield officially get together despite there being heavily implied mutual attraction? And this is keeping more with the whole support program thing, because most support program survivors of domestic abuse, they seriously advise against dating anyone for at least a few months, if not longer.
After killing a vampire.
Yep, AA does says the same thing. Yep, you should not date after dating after a vampire.
Okay.
That's pretty much all I've got. There's a few other things, but you, Mike, you have anything?
Nah.
Okay. Then we get to the plot. We all know the story of Dracula, but have you ever wondered about that story from the perspective of his servant, Renfield? You haven't? Oh. Well, this is awkward. Anyway, it's the modern day, about 2022, and Renfield, played by Nicholas Holt, and his master, played by possibly real-life vampire Nicholas Cage, are now set up in New Orleans. Renfield performs his usual duties of finding victims on which Dracula may feed, but he tries to mitigate the horror by bringing him only bad people, such as the abusive partners or the people he meets at a codependency support group. Because of these meetings, Renfield begins to realize that he is in a toxic, codependent relationship with Dracula. Yes, nothing to do with vampiric mind powers or anything, just codependency. Elsewhere, New Orleans' one good cop, Rebecca, an honest cop on the edge, furious about her murdered cop father and angry about her crooked fellow cops, is trying to bust the evil Lobo gang in a cop fashion. Did I mention she's a cop? She crosses paths with Renfield during a very over-the-top action sequence, and the two feel a connection that has nothing to do with vampires or cops. Renfield then tries to establish his own life, which involves ugly sweaters and cheap apartments. Dracula, being the complete manipulative narcissist that he is enraged by what he sees as a betrayal and joins forces with the Lobos in a plot to take over the world, Pinky!
No!
Rebecca's FBI sister is kidnapped. Rebecca and Renfield have to team up to take on, well, everyone, really. Blood is shed, limbs are ripped off, bugs are eaten. Good, solid family fare.
The film.
Fair to Midland. Oops! Maybe.
So, Mike, as we usually ask, did you ever see this movie? Did you see it in the theaters?
No, I saw it with you.
Oh, that's right.
You made me. I was visiting and you said, we have to watch this.
I said, it has
Nicolas Cage in it. You said, we have to watch this. And yes. I said, but Nicolas Cage. And you said, we have to watch this. And I said, okay.
And then I said, besides, I put something in your drink and you can't stand up for the next couple of hours.
Oh, it wasn't in my drink. But it was chewy. Uh-huh.
Because you could smell it.
Yeah. Now, I forget, though. You had seen it before that or not? I think you hadn't. I don't think you saw it.
No, I don't think
theater.
I did.
Yeah, nope, we saw it together at Airpile. So.
Yep.
But that was too recent. Yes. We don't want to know what we thought then, because then was like 2 years ago. Not even a year ago. So.
Yep. So let's talk about the cast.
Yeah.
Nicholas Holt as Renfield. I like him. I've always found him very likable, and I think he's got remarkable range.
Well, yeah, like this part here is Renfield, and then his part is Jonathan Harker in Nosferatu. Oh, no, because he also plays the Beast and other things.
Oh, yeah, he's done tons of stuff.
The only thing I will say is I did not realize this before, but Nicholas Holt is hauntingly tall.
He is excessively tall.
Awkwafina, let's see how to put this, isn't.
Isn't, yes. Awkwafina is a tiny little woman.
Well, and the thing is that I know that Nicolas Cage is tall, but I think Nicholas Holt is taller, and that's kind of weird.
He might be by like an inch or so.
Yeah.
I think that's why he keeps slumping, and all of the scenes with them are shot like from a forced perspective that make Dracula look like he's looming over him.
Not until he's on a string, but there you go.
Yeah. Well.
No, I like Nicholas Holt. You know, mm-hmm. I think his acting in Nosferatu was better than it is here, but I honestly think that may have to do with Robert Eggers being a much better director than whoever this guy is.
Yeah, well.
But he's fine, and I like Nicholas Holt. I will mm-hmm. watch him in other things, I am sure. Chris McKay, that's who the director is.
Yeah. And I hesitate to ask, what about Nicolas Cage?
So Awkwafina is one
of... Oh, dear.
He's kind of borderline bad, because first he starts off doing a very terrible Bela Lugosi impersonation when they're recreating the scenes from the first movie. Then he goes to a British accent, at which he does not excel. And then he just gives up halfway through the film and he's like, I'm Nicolas Cage. Which I'm sure is what Chris McKay wanted. He's like, I want that crazy over, because everyone loves it when he goes crazy. And the problem is that I don't know. He's okay.
You just don't like him. Yeah.
I don't like him, but I don't think, well, we'll get back to the rest of the movie, yeah. But in some ways, and this is going to sound dumb from what I just said, but in some ways, I don't think he goes far enough.
Well, really, I thought he was having a lot of fun chewing on the scenery.
Oh, I'm sure he had a great time. It was me who wasn't having as good a time with his performance. He's okay. I think he's overrated as an actor, honestly. I think people just like him, see him go crazy, but I'm not really a fan.
Okay, let's move on to Awkwafina.
Whom I love. I love Awkwafina. I love her in everything. Really good. Mm-hmm. I liked her in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yep.
I liked her. What was one of her bigger? Actually, she does a really good dramatic, a short dramatic part in Swan Song, which we reviewed a while back. She's playing a cancer victim who's dying, and she shows that she doesn't have to just be funny, but she is funny, and I like her. So yeah.
She's done good dramatic stuff like The Funeral. Well, she's done a lot.
Yeah.
She's got her act. She also has range. She's even fun in little parts in Ocean's 8.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah. Ben Schwartz.
Perfectly loathsome.
Yep.
I swear I know. Like, I'm looking at his face. It's like, I know you from something. And the first film that popped up when I clicked on his name was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes, he's the voice of Sonic in all three Sonic movies.
Okay. But he is actually kind of perfect as that. I'm a really tough guy who's actually not really tough. I just surround myself with tough guys I tell to do stuff kind of character. And I think he does a great job because I hated him. His name is Tedward Lobo. Yes,
I love that.
Tedward. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. You say it. You say it.
Oh, come on. It's Shora Agdashlu. It's not that hard.
Oh, I couldn't. That was too short.
She's Bella Francesca Lobo. She is, oh my God, I want to sleep in a bed made of her voice.
If you've not seen The Expanse, she plays a major role in that show, and she is amazing.
She is, by the way, the first real Iranian actor to break out into mainstream American films.
I've only seen her, I think, in three things. The Expanse, this, and I forget what the third thing is. I love her. She's got such a sense of power, a sense of, like, I don't care. She's probably like 5'4". She's probably the small woman.
Matter.
But it's like, I wouldn't think even twice about coming up to her and doing anything physical because I think she could just whip me into the wall with her voice. She's amazing. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, she has so much presence. And she's so good at being both charming, elegant, and just drop-dead scary.
Like, she's the kind of actor that it's like, yeah, actors shouldn't run for president. I would so vote for her for president.
Yep. And that's most of the main characters.
Yeah. There's people that are in the support group, and they're fine. And there's people that are probably nice hench people that are fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's and the rest, kind of, for this film.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, fine. To good to Nicolas Cage. Actually, did you say what you thought? You know, you liked Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I like Nicolas Cage in a lot of things. I think he's having fun in this, and it's always fun to watch an actor enjoying themselves. Part of my problem is the way the movie is structured, but we'll get to that.
I will say, and I don't know why this is true, but I have watched National Treasure I don't know how many times. It is such a dumb movie, and it's still kind of perfectly entertaining in its dumbness. Although, to be fair, I also recently rewatched Hudson Hawk, which is also perfectly entertaining in its dumbness. Although it's a very different dumbness. Or is that Mr. Dumbness? Is that Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yep, that's right.
Mr. Dumbness.
Mr. Dumbness. Yep. I don't know. My guilty pleasure with Nicolas Cage is Gone in 60 Seconds, where he's a car thief.
Oh, yeah. You know, I did see that. Isn't that the one where there's a scene where he's sort of just sort of waving his hand and he just goes, now, or something like that?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
I just like pulls on his leather jacket, looks, and I am a bad, bad man.
Huh. I pull on my jacket and go, my leather jacket, and go, huh, it's cold out. so, yeah. We start off with little black and white recreations from the original Dracula.
Not a bad shot for shot.
No, except for when Nicolas Cage tries to do Bela Lugosi.
He's
a full head taller than Bela, but with his cape up, they figured nobody would ever notice.
Exactly. At least he wasn't somebody's chiropractor.
it's fine. And I think, Nicholas Holt isn't going as over the top as the original guy who played Renfield, which is fine. Because if he tried to do that for the whole film.
I was paying attention. He does the laugh once.
Right.
Just that's one thing. It's very subdued.
Yeah, we don't need more than that because then I don't think the character would have worked.
No.
And we get a very early fight in this film. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, if you get to that fight and you're like, wow, this is really gross, you should probably stop there because the fights don't get less gross. Nothing.
They get worse and worse. There's a lot of that budget went for fake blood and God knows what else.
Well, except you can tell us a lot of that blood is CG. Like, that is true.
Blood doesn't
funny.
Splatter that way.
Mm-hmm. It also makes cleaning up the set a lot easier.
Yes.
What did you think of the violence in this film?
I thought it was okay in the beginning because it's very kind of cartoony almost. The problem is, and I guess this is sort of jumping ahead a bit, it's the whole tone of the movie changes several times.
Yeah.
And it's even, I think, the type of movie changes, and we'll get to that. Initially, it didn't bother me. I think there was too much of it.
I can't tell. Part of me is like, maybe they should have gone further into, like, Van Helsing territory. But there's one point, like, it's so ridiculous. When Renfield eats bugs, he gets superpowers, which you might remember from the original book, because that's a thing.
Sure, why not?
And at one point, he's being attacked by, I guess they're actually cops, although, quite honestly, they're wearing bandanas and stuff over their face, which actually is kind of frightening because suddenly there's this whole ice thing.
It looks like ice agents, yeah.
But he literally grabs this guy by the arms, pulls both arms off the guy, and then throws the arms into other attacking policemen, which is, at that point, you're just like, okay, I can't really be offended.
Oh, no,
it's so
Lobos.
Dumb.
They
were together.
The apartment fight.
Yeah, in the Sunshine Tower.
He also
tower.
Tears off some guy's arm in the Mulates, which, by the way, is a real New Orleans restaurant.
Really? Because I'm like, I want to go there. That place looks awesome.
It's called the Original Cajun Restaurant.
Oh. Mm-hmm. See, I want to go. I bet the food's good, too.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun.
Of course it's good. It's New Orleans.
New Orleans is really living off a reputation that's long gone, right? It's all about the jazz clubs and stuff that were there, but now it's all touristy stuff, so. Mm. Or so I've heard. To be fair, I've never been. Have you ever been?
I've never been to New Orleans, no.
So, yeah, the violence in this film is very, very bloody. There is lots of guts. I mean, Renfield gets disemboweled twice in the first 10 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
There's lots of neck chunk biting out, stuff like that. So if you're somebody who is offended by that kind of violence, this might be something to avoid.
Yeah, this is not a movie for you.
And I don't like I don't like hyper-realistic violence. I don't like Tarantino, who loves to shove the camera right in the violence so you're not going to look away. You're going to see every last thing. And he really exults in the pain that's being caused. And that's what I can't stand about his violence. This, to me, it didn't bother me because it was just so like, oh, sure, this happens. Like, when you throw an arm, there's nothing pointy. It can't impale somebody because there's nothing. But, who cares? So I didn't mind it. And I actually thought it worked with the general tone of the film because it's supposed to be a comedy. And it mostly is. And it starts off that way, because we start off with seeing Renfield go to a support group.
Yeah, and he has a lot of funny lines, like when they show him eating insects, like, ah, yes, the bugs. This comes up a lot. There's some inner monologuing with him. Briefly, there's one for Rebecca, and then it just goes away.
Yeah,
I have to say, I liked some of Dracula's lines. I don't ask for much, Renfield. Just the blood of a few dozen innocents.
Yeah, let's go back real quick because I wanted to talk about the support group, because that's sort of a central aspect of the film is that people have determined that relationships have different meanings than we thought they did, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so people are trying to examine the relationships they're in that can be damaging and stuff. And of course, the relationship between Renfield and Dracula is problematic. What did you think of the use of that support group?
I liked it. I thought that was actually a pretty original idea. I mean, I was kind of hoping it would be like, hi, my name's Renfield and I'm a minion of evil. Hi, Renfield! See, that's the part of the movie that intrigued me initially, was the whole idea of this being a toxic relationship instead of, in effect, a supernatural one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's the whole sharing of blood and the fact that Dracula actually can control him and speaks to his mind. But I do kind of like that interpretation. And I liked I liked the characters in there. I like Carol, who's like, every time she starts to talk, something happens with Renfield and interrupt.
Yeah.
Can I get through one goddamn share, please?
I did, too. I liked that it was both a serious use of present-day mental health culture, but I think it was also taking a little poke at it as well, especially with the affirmations, because, like, saying something doesn't mean anything. You obviously have to really, truly believe it, or it's just saying something.
Part of the idea is that if you say something enough, that's the whole part of an affirmation. If you hear it and believe it, the more you hear it, the more you start to believe it.
I don't personally know if that's true, but I think it was doing both. I think it was both presenting something as classic as Dracula in a modern time frame and looking at it in a very different way, but it was also taking a little poke at it at the same time, which is fine.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, the Mark, the leader of the group, the thing I liked about him is in some ways he's the cliche of the leader of the group, the sort of soft-spoken...
Gay. The word you mean is gay.
I meant soft-spoken. I didn't catch the gay part, but sure.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But he's also actually good at what he does because the insights he has are pretty on target.
Yeah.
I like when Renfield's sitting there going, oh, I don't think you people could really understand. It's like, let me guess. Yeah. You think he could kill you just by snapping his fingers? Well, yes, he could. You think that he can get inside your head? Yes. And I still like a guy in the background. You think he controls rats with his mind? And everyone turns and looks at the guy like, what?
Well, yeah. Mm. Although we don't do rats.
Yeah. I liked that sort of, oh, wow, there really is a parallel here.
Yeah. That I thought was pretty clever and something I hadn't seen before when it comes to vampires, which is nice because that's why we're looking at these movies. They're offbeat. And are they bringing anything new to the whole vampire legend lore or whatever? And in this case, in a way, yeah.
Yeah, I think that worked. I also like a lot of the language and the mannerisms that Dracula uses are classic narcissist abuser stuff where he's like, I'm the real victim here.
Oh, okay. You
know, you're the monster. Reversing is a big abusive tactic.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
It seemed to work.
It did. And it's because, you know, Renfield had the idea is he has the type of personality that unfortunately responds to that.
Which I'm sure is why he was chosen in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I like that part. Uh-oh. Oh, I do want to say one of the points that we really know that the Lobos are evil.
Yeah.
Is when they drive up and their cars have that stupid undercar green lighting. Evil. Pure and simple from the eighth dimension. That is just evil.
It makes you look at the people's car, I guess.
It's just for, you know, showing off. It's just decoration. Yeah. It has no function.
I mean, if it was something where it was actually like scanning potholes, that might be useful, right? Mm. It's like, oh, I have a badass car. Oh, and by the way, you need to fix that on 3rd and Main.
Yeah. The closest you could argue is it makes the car a little more visible at night.
Yeah, I guess. I suppose they're trying to make it look like the car is floating or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It's dick waving. Oops, did I say that? Sorry.
What? Yeah, he was referring to a guy named Richard who waves.
Richard
a lot.
Waving. Okay.
Richard waving, exactly. Uh-huh.
I mean, to be fair, it's kind of a shorthand to show you what dinks these guys are, especially Tedward.
Tedward, who is, in some ways, he's perfect. He's one of the most believable characters. He's one of those ultra privileged guys who is purely coasting on, do you know who my mother is, basically.
Yeah.
Even though he keeps saying, do you know who I am? And obviously nobody knows who he is, because they only know because of her.
Well, that's the beginning of the film. We come across these guys that have stolen drugs from this family, but they haven't really stolen them from the family. They've stolen them from Tedward, because Tedward's a dimwit.
And yes, you know they wouldn't have stolen them from his mother.
No. So I do also like the use of the support group to find victims. It's like, well, I'll try to be a better person. I'll only get bad people that are hurting people and have them killed. And it's like, okay, I mean, we'll just ignore all the other stuff you did in the previous film. Speaking of which, how can this be a sequel? Because if I remember correctly, and I do, Dracula died in that movie.
He got better.
Well, we see some of that, right? Because there's a scene in this film where they have these vampire hunters from... you know, the depths of time or wherever they come from. And they're the last of their kind, although I don't understand why that's a thing.
Yeah, why? I don't know.
And they manage to basically open the curtains and set Dracula on fire, and he gets all burned and charred and nasty. Crackle, 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 which is a bit of a shock, but not quite dead. And now apparently it takes, I don't know how long, decades or whatever, to get Dracula back, which is one of the things that annoys me, because it's like, oh, you're not bringing me enough. I look terrible. I'm all melty and stuff. And then suddenly he's almost fine.
And I'm better. Yeah, that happens awfully fast.
Well, and he didn't bring anybody. Like, it was literally a scene of him berating Renfield for not bringing people, because he brought dead bodies that were already dead, which...
Oh, no, he doesn't care that they're already dead, because he's still eating them. He wants purity. I did like, you know, he says, I want happy couples. I want nuns. I want a busload of cheerleaders. And I did like, female or male? It doesn't matter. It's not a sex thing.
I also, it was a little telegraphed, but I did like the fact that, like, one of the next scenes is...
All of those show up.
At the bar where Renfield is sitting in the mulattes, and there they all drop. First, I think it's the nuns. Some nuns show up. Then the cheerleaders, and it was just hilarious.
And there's a happy couple over at one of the table, and he's just like, oh, come on.
So, yeah. Well, do you want to get to the how we feel about the Dracula part yet, or do you want to do the movie structure part first?
No, let's do a little more on the movie structure.
Okay.
My problem is it starts out as a horror comedy, then it becomes an ultra-violent, in effect, buddy cop movie. Ooh. You know, Renfield and Rebecca, they're cops, almost. It's them against the world. And they keep trying to inject sentiment. Like, ooh, budding relationship, or, ah, yes, this is my tragic past. And it's jarring. And as they get toward the end, I remember thinking there have been a bunch of action movies that have fights in that kind of a structure, that kind of an apartment building with a central courtyard. Yeah. Even Judge Dredd does that.
It's probably the same one.
It might be. And it's like, it didn't fit with the beginning. I thought then it's just like, okay, punch, punch, burn, blow up, kick, kill. It's like, yeah, you've gotten away from what made this movie, was starting to make it unique. And that was the psychology of it.
See, I'm going to actually disagree with you, believe it or not. I think that we know that Renfield would like to not be a part of this relationship, but he doesn't have a real reason or a real direction to go until Awkwafina shows up.
True.
Now, do we necessarily need the Awkwafina daddy issue thing as part of the film? I mean, it explains her gung-ho-ness of being a cop, etc. And, you know, when she's so disappointed when it turns out, how to put this, literally every other cop on the force is being paid off by the Lobos.
How is she still a cop? I don't get it. If the entire force is corrupt, they would have found some reason to fire her.
Well, never mind kill her at one point. Like, halfway through the film, they're like, you know, we should kill her. And then, you know, Mrs. Lobo is like, well, no. We'll offer her a chance to take the money and be part of the force, too. And then she doesn't take it. And then she's like, well, I guess we're going to have to fight her. And it's like, well, you could just shoot her.
Yeah, she's right there. Just shoot her.
But I honestly thought that I actually liked the little montage where he's setting up his apartment. It was so 60s sitcom. I thought it was funny. And I thought
the music.
Yeah, well, and it was also like taking the support group to an extreme, which I think they were trying to, again, poke things at this, where he sets everything up and he's got his little affirmations on the wall and everything, et cetera, et cetera. I think without his relationship with Awkwafina, we wouldn't understand his motivation. So it didn't really bother me. I can understand why it would bother you. It just didn't bother me.
The part with Awkwafina, it wasn't so much the relationship that kind of worked. It was it turns into the raid, or one of these, you know, we're going to go in there and get your sister out. Blam, boom, kablam.
But this is where I think the cartoonish violence actually works, because if it had been as brutal as the raid or one of those serious violent films, would have been a tonal shift that I didn't care for. But the fact that it's nearly Bruce Campbell levels of craziness, and quite honestly, oh dear gods, would I have rather seen Bruce Campbell as Dracula? Yeah, I think I really would. I really think I would. If it was Evil Dead or Sam Raimi.
I know you don't like him, but I think Nick Cage is a better actor.
Oh, I don't think that Bruce Campbell has a lot of range, but this is well within his range.
I think that's true.
Harrison Ford doesn't have a lot of range either, and he's been very smart, and he generally picks characters and roles that work well with him. But, like, would you want to see him in, like, Remains of the Day or Howard's End or something like that? No.
Not particularly, no.
Or trying to do an accent? No.
I don't want to hear him try to do an English accent. I think that would be painful.
Me either. So, I didn't find the tonal shifts didn't even occur to me until you mentioned it. So this is weird because usually it's me who has trouble with those and you are like, oh, I didn't have a problem with it, but that's all right. That's fine.
What do you think about the pacing of the movie?
It was a little uneven, and this does feed into your issues with the tonal shifts, because when we're doing the more serious relationship-y kind of things, the movie slows down.
Yeah.
And then we get these crazy blinking, you'll miss it, fight scene stuff, and it goes very, very fast. I don't think it's really bad. I just think that there is parts that are slower. It is not a consistent, it doesn't build as much as some films of this type. I think there are slow parts to it. Not enough to distract, but slower parts. No. How about you?
Overall, I think the pacing is decent. I think it moves along pretty well. It's not a very long movie. It's like an hour and a half.
It's about right.
There are parts where it drags just a little. But again, as you say, not enough to derail it. It makes perfect sense to me that one of the writers is a comic book writer, because this feels very comic booky.
Well, Robert Kirkman. I mean, that makes perfect sense, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't actually do a comic of this, so it's not an adaptation, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah. It's a little uneven, but I don't think it's enough. Especially some of the slower parts are parts that involve Shura Agdashlu, and I'm like, I don't care.
Those parts aren't slow. Those are framing devices for her.
Oh, she's so awesome.
Nothing she does is slow. It's always amazing.
She's just awesome. Yeah, so, pacing's fine. It's an hour and a half. It'd have been longer. If it had been like a two-hour film, that would have been way too much.
Yeah, it would have been too much, I think,
So, vampires. Well, we have one, to be fair, in this film.
Yeah.
Now, they're going off the movie Dracula, Bela Lugosi, that legend lore of vampires, except apparently Dracula's blood can heal.
Oh, yeah. No, that's in the book. It's on page...
you're writing it in crayon, Max. I can see it.
No. The original manuscript was done in Crayola. It's a well-known fact.
Yeah.
Dracula's blood is resurrection juice.
Yep. Not just even like, oh, I have this bad wound you just inflicted on me, master. Could you possibly patch me up so I might go get you a snack? No.
Dracula shows up at one point, spoiler, and kills the entire support group.
Yep.
And they bring them all back to life. And all I could think is, well, you are real lucky nobody was cremated.
Well, never mind the fact that at least in a lot of the lore, that's the way you make new vampires.
That's the thing. The blood is what changes. In fact, you give it to a recently dead person, that's how you make a friggin' vampire.
Also, let's face it. As soon as we see him do the thing where he's like, my blood heals you, I don't know about you, but I'm like, okay. So now you're going to put the gun back in the drawer, and then in Act 3, Chekhov's going to open the drawer and the gun comes out again. Because there's actually two Chekhov's guns in this. Do you know what the other one is? It's so dumb.
No, tell me.
It's the ant farm.
Oh, yes, that's right. You see the ant farm, and Redfield eventually eats it, which I actually thought was kind of... They could have done... It was a funny idea, but I thought they could have done a lot better.
Yeah, I just was like, okay, here, kid, I'll give you some ants for your ant farm, the way that kids all today still have ant farms. Yeah. Well, I wonder if that's going to come into play later on. Spoiler, it does.
I mean, Renfield doesn't, I don't think in any of the versions, Renfield doesn't have any kind of superpowers. He's not super strong or fast. He eats bugs so he doesn't age to death. That's what keeps him alive.
Doesn't age to death.
He doesn't. He's over 100 years old.
Yeah.
Not in the book, but traditionally, he doesn't. Sorry, he doesn't grow old.
Oh,
they keep him. Basically, Dracula in the stories doesn't let him drink human blood. He orders him not to, so he forces him to eat bugs to stay alive.
But Renfield's not a vampire, is he?
No, he's a familiar. He has an element of Dracula's power in him, because he has to, because Dracula can see through his eyes and so forth.
Okay, that's fair. But healing blood.
Yeah, I
mean,
yeah. They've got a pitcher full of resurrection juice.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact, if anyone had figured that out, and he says this in front of Shara Agdashlu, I would think her thing is, all right, we're going to chain you up with big iron and silver chains and milk you forever.
Yeah.
We've got the cure for everything here.
Yeah.
Apparently no side effects.
From what we see, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, I guess he's been using it on Renfield for however long. So, yeah. I just was like, okay,
this is silly. This is awkward. Yeah.
However,
to Deus Ex Machina, yeah.
One of the things he does, which is not technically standard lore exactly, is there are times when, mostly during the fights, he turns into this big flock of bats. I thought that looked really cool. They did that really well. Cool. Especially the part where the curtain comes out, he catches fire, and he turns into a flock of bats that are on fire.
Yeah, I gotta say, the cloud of flaming bats. I mean, flaming bats, I want to start a band called the Flaming Bats.
I think you did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they actually, we don't see wolves, we don't see rats.
No.
He does float. He doesn't really fly, but no, he floats. But
he does. He levitates.
Yeah, but the bats were so well done, because every time we see a bat in a vampire film, it's on a string and it's just bouncing up and down like, oh no, there's the bat hovering the way bats never do. And these bats fly the way they're supposed to. They're like zipping all over the place. Like you can barely see them.
Yep. I thought that was really... They also, you notice he doesn't show any mind control powers. What he shows is being incredibly persuasive.
Yeah.
And that I liked. I liked that the whole idea that he is a narcissist, he is incredibly manipulative, and he's so old that he's unbelievably good at it.
Well,
he knows exactly what buttons to push.
To be fair, I don't know how much skill you need to, how shall we say, entice Tedward.
Well, no. Tedward, you can basically, hey, Ted, watch me jingle my keys. Okay, I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah. Well, then he makes.
I do like some of Tedward's lines, like, "That's your problem. You're an empty husk. Me, I'm a full husk. I'm full of power." And it's like,
and the bug thing too, because we get to see him snort a centipede. Because okay, sure.
Ew.
I will say too, though, the bug thing doesn't quite pan out, because right before the fight, Renfield eats like every bug he can find, and it seems to do nothing.
No difference. It doesn't last longer. It's not higher power.
It's just literally a scene where we watch him eat bugs, and it's like, oh, ick, he's eating bugs.
I did like the fact that, where do you get them? He goes to a bait shop.
Yeah. Walt's and Crawlers, if you're anywhere in the Midwest.
Yep. I kept thinking this was taking place in New York, because they didn't really, I think, take enough advantage of it being New Orleans.
Well, that might be because it may not have been filmed there.
I'm betting it was not. But I'm like, okay, yeah, Louisiana, of course they'd have bait shops.
Yeah, every time they showed New Orleans, I'm like, wow, either New Orleans is way bigger than I thought it was, or that's Los Angeles.
Or that's Vancouver. Yeah.
Yeah, or whatever. And I'm sure you said Melades is a real place, so I'm sure that they did not shoot the actual fight there.
They must have done some stuff in the city, yeah.
But yeah, it didn't, I mean, I don't know what New Orleans, I've never been there, but it didn't feel New Orleans-ish.
No, it didn't to me either. But again, like you say, I haven't been there. I don't know what it really looks like.
We do have one little nit to pick, because they keep talking about ska music. And at the end of the movie, they play music over the credits. It is not ska music.
Oh.
No. I don't know what that is.
Just looking, the whole movie, by the way, is filmed in New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah.
They magically made New Orleans not look like New Orleans, or at least what we expected it to. Huh.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe
that's not ska over the end?
No, it is not.
I mean, the lyrics that are painted on the wall, those are from a ska band. But they didn't use... Why would you not use ska music when they've been making fun of it all night?
I don't know. I mean, Boston is actually a big ska town. And it was...
Really?
80s, 90s. Oh, yeah. Ska was very big.
Wait, you mean ska, like the music, or... Is that you just pronouncing scar the way Boston would?
No, the music.
Yeah, I got a ska on my leg.
I'm trying to think. The Mighty Mighty Bosstones. There's a couple other big bands that did ska. Ska was huge in the Boston area. Yeah. Wow. Okay. But that whatever they were playing, ska is... if you heard it, you'd go, oh, okay, that's ska. That was not ska. Yeah. So
I yield to your knowledge on music. All right. Huh. One other thing strikes me. Rebecca is remarkably chill at the end about the fact that Renfield has been complicit in the greatest number of serial killer murders in the history of the world.
Well, but he's a nice guy. So, you know, that...
And he doesn't even have the excuse of, I was mind controlled. It's just, I was in a bad relationship.
I mean... but it's Dracula, whom everybody seems to know about, which also surprised me.
That is very odd, and I really wanted to know, because they never say, do they know about Dracula as a fictional character, or is he actually part of history? Do they know who he really is?
It felt very much like he's not for real. He's a boogeyman story, but there's been books and stuff or a movie, but he's not real. And it turns out he is. About that. That's what
I wish they had done something with that. I thought that was underplayed. I thought they could have done more.
It was kind of lazy that they didn't work on that. But you know what's not lazy? Us getting to the end of the show where we decide whether we liked Renfield or not. That is one of my least objectionable transfer or the metaphor, the thingies in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
The finish.
So, Max.
I'm too lazy. I don't want to answer.
You are not Chris McKay.
Ah.
So, we saw this together, which I think was the first time you saw it. And you haven't seen it have you?
Nope. I have not.
So, what do you think of Renfield?
I think it's close to being good. I think there are parts of it I really like. I like some of the performances. I like some of the jokes. I think Nicholas Holt is very charming. I like Awkwafina is so much fun to watch and to listen to. And I know we differ on this, but I like Nicolas Cage in this. I think he's having a blast. And that's always fun to watch. But I think it's way too uneven. I think it can't decide quite what it wants to be. If it wanted to be a comedy, it wanted to be an action movie, wanted to be a buddy cop movie, wanted to be a commentary on recovery culture, I think it tried to do too many things and couldn't make up its mind. I think it's enjoyable. I wouldn't pay for it in the theater, but if you see it on streaming, it's worth a look. What about you?
Well, would you possibly use the word cute?
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
Okay.
In a bloody, gory, disgusting way. What about you?
I think I'm actually pretty much right along with you. I think that it is on the edge of, it's got potential.
Yeah.
And here's my thing. I honestly don't think it goes far enough. I think it needs to be Van Helsing layer levels of, what? And I know there's a lot of people who don't like Van Helsing, but the people who do tend to like it because it's so over the top and ridiculous that you just were like, there's no reality in here. I don't care. And I really do like Van Helsing. I think Van Helsing's a hoot in the same way that the original Mummy was a hoot. Like, it's just nuts. And I think that that's where I'm going to agree with you, that the pacing, actually you didn't have as much a problem with the pacing as I did. I thought it was a little bit slow in places, but I would like to have seen Shura Agdashloo really just let off the leash even more. I would like to have seen the Lobos.
I don't think we saw her enough.
Yeah. Like, I would like the Lobos to have been even crazier. I would like the pace to have been like Tank Girl animation levels. That I think might have been really fun. And that I might not been, even yeah. like even okay, Nicolas Cage. I think Nicolas Cage could easily have gone further than he did. And
we know he can.
So almost but not quite.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel.
Probably B-.
Yeah, I go with that. I do have to say, the Dracula in this has one of the best last lines.
Yeah.
Of I wish to spend a season in hell where all the amusing people are. I went and looked that up to see if it was a quote. It wasn't. That's original to this movie.
Oh, interesting.
I thought I liked that line. I think that's clever.
Yeah. Well, you know what else is clever is our poll question, or at least Max's poll question. So, Max, why don't you...
Another good transition.
All right, that one was actually reasonable. Why don't you re-clever us with your poll question and tell people how they can answer it?
I will out-clever all of you. Yes, what part, if any, of standard vampire lore really strikes you as particularly silly, odd, or dumb? You know, crossing running water, having to be invited in, which they play with in this movie, because Renfield has a welcome mat that says, come on in, and that apparently works.
Yeah.
And again, exemption for Stephanie Meyer's Sparkle Ponies. No Meyer Pyres. And you can tell this by simply whispering it into the ear of one of the children of the night, that it will reach us.
No.
And if you have no children of the night around because you're worried about rabies, you can email us at us@maxmikemovies.com, which is 70% likely not to turn you into a vampire. You can also go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, and leave a comment. We love both of these things.
Much.
Many, many things we love. So much we love. You can also find us on Mediated Socialness.
Facebook, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Moving On, Nope, we've done this to death.
I will never stop. I will never stop, and you can't make me.
I can't. Click.
It's all under Max Mike Movies, as I say. And you can try our hotline, although I should warn you, we've been having some real trouble with it lately. But you can call us at 617-398-7266 and leave a message. Again, that is 617-398-7266.
Yeah, Ernestine's going to get some talking to.
She is, yes. We are getting no ringy-dingies out of this.
No.
But we are coming up to the last episode in the series.
We are.
And this, yes, we are. Mike, what brilliant piece of cinema are you going to offer to close out this so terribly significant series?
Now, wait, you didn't say it had to be brilliant cinema. That was never in the contract.
I thought that was implied.
No.
Oh.
But I am going to go a little off the rails. I'm not going to take one of the films that was on our little list of possible choices. I'm actually going to use a film that was sort of sideways recommended by one of our poll question answerers and longtime listeners.
Are you telling me you're going off the rails on a crazy train?
Sure. I don't think I mentioned a train. Is that from
Tell us, Ozzy. Yes, it's a song by Black Sabbath.
Oh.
Crazy Train.
Yep. Yeah. No, you know, we've talked about, you know, a vampire that lives in an apartment. We've talked about maybe even a city of vampires, but we've never talked about a planet of vampires.
Oh, no.
So Vince.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Our buddy from up north happened to mention in this week's poll question, the movie Planet of the Vampires. It looks like a wonderful Italo-American production.
Damn you, you Canuck bastard.
And I checked. It is rentable, so you can watch it ahead of time. It looks like it has a very different take on vampires, which is what we're looking for, offbeat vampire films, in that it takes place on another planet.
Huh. All right.
It's also, I think it's an American International release, and those are always awesome.
How could something be both American and international?
I don't know. You should watch and find out. Watch and find out Planet of the Vampires, next week's exciting episode.
Blood!
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.